Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about Newton's laws. I'm just going to have a quick review, coming at two conceptual levels, and then just what's expected of you at school, if you're at a school. So at a conceptual level, a law, what is a law of physics? A law is a generally accepted description. So it's a law, it doesn't explain anything. A law is a description of what's going on, and basically the law of gravity is that something falls under the law of gravity. It's saying, well, in general, if I hold an object out and I let go, I observe that it falls down all the time. So that's the law of gravity. And then it's very descriptive. It's not necessarily laws result from a theory, can be explained by a theory, but the laws themselves are basically true, or true, accepted as true. So that's going to be important into the sort of last part of this introduction section. So that's laws. So laws, descriptions, theories is a body of consistent explanation, which has got various things, the explanation, but it's also got the terminology, the self-consistent terminology with that explanation. It's a sort of like a package deal, sort of the package deal. And so basically, if you want to use a theory, you also have to use the terminology, which are also defined. So it's sort of like a toolkit. A theory is an explanation toolkit. A law is basically a general description that everyone recognises, the basically the, I suppose, turning right law. That's the law. So that describes your behaviour. And if your behaviour is not like that description, you have broken the law. You're outside the law. I hope that gets across. Now, that's one aspect to get you into the idea of, is the law an explanation of what's going on? No, it's a description. Can you really understand what's going on from it? No, well, it's not the intention. That's the first thing on about law. The second aspect is about Newton himself. Newton himself didn't invent these laws like from nothing. There was certain things going on. First is that there was an Aristotelian view that the laws, descriptions of, they had a different description, and they had a law. They had a law that things in motion eventually stopped going in motion, and then they dropped down, but not for space. So they had two different laws, one law for Earth and one law for the heavens. So that's an important thing. And their view is that things in the heavens, the things which kept on going in motions, eventually went in a long, long circle. And which is what we tend to observe. That's a more descriptive things. And those Aristotelian laws are actually laws because they were a good description at the time. And so Galileo, who's is pretty famous for having the shoulders on which Newton stood, believed in a lot of Aristotelian views, and he believed that his ball going along a rail would continue going along a rail and eventually go on a curved path. Which is absolutely true. Like if you've got a train or something which is rolling and it eventually rolls over the horizon, it goes on a very curved path. So that's one aspect that his laws were being put forward in constant distinction between the Aristotelian laws. So his first law is really, if you look at it mathematically, a subset of his second law, but it's there to state a clear break with the Aristotelian view. Now, there's another aspect, is that why three laws? Oh, because Descartes, a person who came from a different set of thinking, he was much more Descartes was a philosopher. Newton had a huge impact on philosophy. If you say Descartes sort of structured philosophy as the concept that we might even have a reason, be able to reason things out. You don't have to actually even though he believed in God, he had a theory of reason. But his Oh, mind of matter, I think, therefore I am, that mind-matter differentiation, the enunciation of the soul and all that type of stuff. And Descartes didn't abhorred vacuum, and he said that space is full and connected, and he had various ways of explaining things. He had magnetic force, which he explained as little corkscrew particles which flew from away from things. Now, eventually, Descartes was not so much developing a description, he was developing a theory, an explanation theory. Now, the strange thing is that Descartes' exchange of particles actually goes up with a lot of advanced science now, string theory, Feynman diagrams, exchange of particles to explain the forces between things, but he had a far more mechanistic view, and he also had three laws which were just ever so complicated and similar to Newton's laws. And Newton was basically an arch intellectual rival of everyone. He was a bit of a rival person. So he had three laws. So it was the natural thing was that there was the existing set of laws, and three was the number of laws. There'll be three laws. You can imagine Monty Python or a comedian. You come up with three laws. Don't go away. You've got 10 commandments. You need three laws of physics to come across. So with that being said, in summary, the fact that there was existing laws and the scene was set for three laws, people were expecting everything to be summarized in three laws. Newton came up with these laws. Now, the first two laws are really pretty, can be summarized in the first way. And what more, the laws themselves refer to an individual object, which we call a body nowadays, and it describes the motion of that body. But the important thing to understand with Newton is that several things. He didn't have equations, he didn't have the multiplication sign, and he didn't actually, or he did describe these laws, but a lot of things he had described was he described a solution using these laws, and we inferred that he had worked them out to come across them. But the other thing to do is that derived from Newton is force is invented by Newton, mass is invented by Newton, differential calculus is invented by Newton. So if you look at Newton, it's really hard to actually say he used this. He started multiple things at the same time, and then this creation of multiple things from Newton's stuff, we have defined energy, work, kinetic energy are all verbalizations of this initial act of creation. So it's sort of like a very explosive act of creation. In terms of physics, we can see the ideas are sort of like fading behind. So the original idea of mass was come up by Charles of Rome trying to reconcile the transmutation of wine into blood and bread into flesh. How could that possibly happen? So he came up with the idea of mass. So you've got all these ideas and force. It really Newton really didn't really. He was still in half a foot in both worlds, his world and the old world, which looked at momentum. And in a sense, that he led us into a world, and then Einstein went back to the momentum idea, momentum and energy, went back to more basic principles to run us forward. So if you can imagine like Einstein reversed out and took the position going through. So that's another thing with the first laws, all these concepts, like momentum and impulse and action. So action is what you did to something to make it move. Okay, and a reaction is stopping. So, with all those things, let's get into the basic laws, and I call them N1, N2, N3. I'm just going to read out a summary. Now, in an inertial frame of reference, now it so happens now that we say inertial frame is there's no forces accelerating on it, so it's inertial frame of reference is not a mass that's falling down. Inertial reference basically is circularly defined as something which It's a frame of reference in which Newton's laws apply. That's now how it's come across. But it says, in an inertial frame of reference, an object either remains at rest or continues to move along at a constant velocity or at a constant speed in a straight line unless acted upon by a force. Now, that's different definitions. Now, remember that Newton wrote in Latin, so a lot of this is hard to explain. So it says, in the circumstances, there's no external forces acting. So this is a bit of a tautology. An object, now the word object, the word we have for object has got a bit of a, sorry, philosophical origin. It's derived with form, the two causes, the combination of the two causes of Aristotle gives us what an object is. But conceptually, we can draw a boundary around an object and say the matter inside that has a certain mass, and then we call that an object, physical object, a body. And this is sort of like a bit of a contortion. An object at rest or traveling at speed will continue to travel at a speed in a straight line unless acted upon by an unbalanced force. Now, it's hard to say that force is something which is only later defined by Newton in further laws, so this is strange. The second law is, and I read, in an inertial frame, the vector sum of forces on an object is equal to the mass of the object multiplied by the acceleration of the object, F equals ma. Assumed here that the mass is constant, C below, it's obviously described for a rocket. So again, Newton didn't necessarily have vectors, but it is true that the unbalanced force, a vector sum, which doesn't go to zero, there's a resultant force. That resultant force will cause the body to accelerate inversely proportional to its mass. Now, Newton, when you actually read Principia, the Latin, he says the rate of increase of momentum. It's a very complicated the way that he says it. And of course, what happens here is that they say something and then they write something which doesn't correspond to it. They would either say R, the resultant, R equals M dot or M dot A vector. So you'd have to write A as a vector, R as a vector, R as a resultant. Or you could say the sum of forces equals R equals ma. So you really need R for resultant force. And so when the resultant force is zero, there's no acceleration, which is the first law. When it's not zero, it equals m times a. And basically, the now I've got multiple definitions of maths. But initially, the way that you acceleration measure mass is the coefficient of acceleration that an object has. So if it's very massive, it doesn't begin to move very much. So therefore, that's its mass. So it's a descriptive thing. Second law. Now, the third law, which I come across, is not to do with a body. It's to do with a system. So multiple bodies touching each other. And for every force, there's for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. Now, the word action was a word before force, and it meant the change of momentum of an object. But reading this, it says, when one body exerts a force on a second body, see, they haven't actually defined what body is previously. They've talked about object, but body is the term for we're going to apply Newton's laws for it. The second body simultaneously exerts a force equal in magnitude and opposite in direction on the first body. Basically, for any force, it's an equal and opposite force that you can't you can never generate a force from nothing. You always have to have something to push against it. So this is the various things that you can see. So in teaching schools, it's a complicated thing to do. A complicated thing to go with it. But you also need N1, N2, N3, N1 and 2 in brackets together. They're just the same thing. Bodies, N3 systems, and examples of N1. Means law 1 is the cloth underneath the vase or the passenger flying forward. N2 would be a ball being dropped or a rocket being fired, some sort of acceleration, or a pendulum swinging out to the side as you're turning a corner. N3 would be the click of billiard balls to go through it all to actually get it there. But there's a lot of complexity in teaching Newton's laws because the actual definitions of things are dependent on Newton's laws. One of the things I want to point out is the concept of an inertial frame. The only true inertial frame that we can really have in three dimensions is in very, very deep space. Then we have a lot of things which are near inertial frames. So if you're in orbit around the Earth, you should be able to in a box and not be able to tell that you're orbiting. But you can tell you're orbiting, because if you put two balls and sit them on top of each other, they'll eventually drift apart because they'll be travelling at slightly different orbits. So they'll be travelling at different periods of rotation if they're different heights. Right, so that depends. If they're side by side, they'll never drift apart. But if they're one above each other, so it's non-inertial in the vertical plane, even in the space station, ever so slightly. If you are have a train and you're in it and you're playing billiards on a train, for sure, you can't tell how fast you're going if you're playing billiards on a train. However, it's only inertial in the x. If you've got Z direction and Y, how you flip it, say you're travelling in the Y direction, the Z direction's up, it's only inertial in the XY direction. It is inertial because if you drop a ball, it will fall down. So even a train travelling at constant velocity is only marginally, has only got two dimensions of it in its inertial frame. So one of the things to remember about inertial frames is, for the examples, is that you can have a partial inertial frame, and that's within two dimensions of three dimensions. It's actually very hard to get a three-dimensional inertial frame, and for that you really need to be far away from any source of gravity or magnetism or anything like that. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.